Good morning, everyone. You are listening to Green Left Radio. And for our program today, we are very happy to be interviewing Jonathan Lockhart, who is an African-American activist based in Sydney, who is also a podcaster who produces and presents the podcast.
Morning, Jacob. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Morning,
really appreciate
Jonathan.
It.
Yeah. So I guess one of the discussion. I mean, one of the things we're going to be discussing with Jonathan is these kind of recent kind of events that have happened in the United States, specifically around Donald Trump and the assault on the Capitol building in Washington. If I'm remembering location, my knowledge of American geography isn't the best, and basically wanted to sort of unpack a bit of an analysis, I guess, of some of the events, especially the inherent kind of racism behind the far right that stormed the Capitol building. So I guess to start off, Jonathan, what can you tell us a bit in terms of the summary of those events as they kind of unfolded, especially since for a lot of our listeners, we probably didn't necessarily, with all the kind of news headlines that were sort of coming through day by day.
Yeah, sure, no problem.
Have a kind of clear idea.
I guess one of the most salient points to bring up is that from, you know, the presidential election coming into now, Donald Trump has, you know, and his constituents, you know, within the right wing and within his supporters in the GOP, we've kind of reached this point now where he has kind of made this, ostensibly it's like this boogeyman around the fact that, around the, legitimacy of the, 2020 election. And, going into January the 6th, he had planned, a series of rallies called Stop the Steal. Okay. And, within, Stop the Steal on January the 6th, he had like a number of his folks, speaking a few blocks away from the Capitol, like Rudy Giuliani and his children, etc. And they had planned on that day having a march to the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. Now, after that, it's a haze of different accounts and things that ended up happening. But ostensibly, there was insurgent actors, let's say, within the far right who had kind of wanted to use the means of the Stop the Steal protest, quote unquote, to basically enact sedition. On that day in the U.S. Capitol, in the Senate, in the parliamentary chambers, it was set to certify, you know, the state elections for Joe Biden as the president elect. So as time rolled on, it became apparent that what they were trying to enact was literally that, like, as they put it, like, stop the steal. They were trying to make it into the parliamentary chambers, into the Senate floor, in order to quite literally take the votes out of senators' hands in order to not certify the election.
Yeah, and I guess one of the more interesting sort of things about these events is the fact that they were kind of able to assault the kind of Capitol kind of building itself, because I can sort of just imagine what the kind of state kind of response would be if it was a group of Black Lives Matter protesters with guns, like, or hypothetical, assaulting the Capitol building. What was sort of the reasoning why that these group of kind of far right, people were able to even get as far
that's pretty funny. That has like a couple moving parts to it as well. One of them being that, you know, the U.S. Capitol is protected by, you know what I mean, different intelligence groups like the Secret Service, FBI, et cetera, right, of the senators. And the steps and the grounds of the U.S. Capitol were being protected by the Metro Police, by the Capitol Metro. And from the reports that I've seen thus far, there was, one, a communications breakdown between, you know, Secret Service and the people who were, you know, guys to protect, you know, the senators inside and Capitol Metro. But within that, I find your question, like, it's pretty interesting. There's try to think of the best way to put this. It's kind of like the same reason as to why you don't see Spider-Man and Peter Parker in the same location, if you know what I mean. And that on the far right, you know, they've been acting, you know, since, you know, I'll say, you know, since, you know, we've kind of seen the dawning of Black Lives Matter, you know, this is like 2013 to 2014, that the police, you know what I mean, as a state institution, that's their number one guise, is to protect, you know, the power apparatus, and, you know, which, you know, deems their actions justifiable. And within that, they most likely, you know what I mean, this is, you know, a bit of personal opinion speaking here, they most likely saw, you know, these far right activists, again, quote unquote, as something, you know, maligned. You know what I mean? They probably most likely did not see the actions that they were taking on that day as anything to really, you know, raise arms against, until it was quite literally too late, until they were like destroying state property.
You know, does that kind of reflect the fact that they, I mean, I haven't seen any sort of strong evidence that, you know, there's not necessarily a conspiracy of collusion between all the kind of state departments, between the state departments and the kind of far right. But what there does seem to be kind of evidence of is within the actual kind of police force itself, there is a certain level of sympathy between, in sort of the kind of, you know, rank and file kind of police officers for the this kind of far right. And I guess want to sort of hear your sort of comments.
Yeah. I have to agree. Sort of, you know, kind of like pulling, like I said, from like 2013, you know, the dawning of like, you know, what we now, you know, as the, you know, Black Lives Matter movement, into today, you know, so many people have pointed out those ideas that, you know, like I said, the police, the state apparatus, they see, you know, far right activists, you know, these terror groups as maligned. And as they have taken to the streets from the George Floyd protest till now, they have quite literally, you know what I mean, walked arms and armed with them. They call them friendlies, etc. So we could see, you know, right on its face, you know, that a lot of what they deem to believe, try to think of the best way to put this, what they deem to believe as justifiable actions by these far right activists, they see it as something that they can align themselves with. And through that, they, like I said, they quite literally would allow them to, you know, march into the steps of the U.S. Capitol and destroy property. You know, like I said, like a Black Lives Matter protest, and say that, you know, the means were reversed. This would not, we would not see the same sort of action taking place. It would be, I don't think this is a person alive today who could look at the actions that happened on January the 6th and think otherwise.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, what has, in terms of this kind of assault on the kind of Capitol kind of building, what has really been the response of the establishment? And I'm talking in terms of the establishment, both, you know, the media, like the kind of mainstream kind of media, but also the Republicans, because there has been a certain level of public sympathy from the from Republican politicians for this kind of assault. And in fact, we've even seen some sympathy for it from our own very own Australian politicians, and also the Democrat establishment, who, you know, in some ways have condemned and obviously condemned the kind of assault on the Capitol building.
Yeah, you know, as far as like the Democrats are concerned, I'm trying to remember if it was, I think it might have been like the next day or maybe the day after, you know, President-elect Joe Biden came out, and it was a pretty again, personal opinion speaking here, I felt like it was a pretty middling statement. You know, I mean, it's, you know, it's a lot of like this sort of like milquetoast kind of neoliberal you know, statements that you would see from someone who's trying to legitimize, you know, the office of the White House, adversely the state. And that, you know, one of his most salient points, as we've seen so often from these sorts of institutions, is, in quote, you know, this is not who we are, this is not what America is, etc., as opposed to you know, quite literally, you know, trying to raise awareness about these sorts of things within state power, because that delegitimizes the apparatus and the systems in which they and the systems in which they control. The Republicans also, you know, it's been a bit twofold, where it's like, you know, some of the Republican, you know, senators and congressmen, right? They still want to be able to, you know, become a part of like different lobbies and, you know what I mean? They still want, they don't want their funding, you know what I mean, from any of these state institutions to stop coming in. So, a number of them have started, distancing themselves from the Trump White House and so on.
Now, the next kind of question about that kind of flows from that in terms of how the establishment has kind of responded to it. I've seen kind of a lot of kind of commentary about how, yeah, you know, this assault on kind of the Capitol, you know, doesn't represent what America kind of is. And I guess I want to sort of hear a bit of more kind of theoretical kind of analysis from you, I guess, on, you know, in terms of this, the context, the political context for this far right assault on the kind of Capitol kind of building, how does it kind of link with the sort of ideologies of white supremacy and really the kind of foundation of the United States, which is, you know, and like Australia, inherently a country that is essentially founded on racism.
You nailed it there in your opening statement here about, you know, us getting ready to talk about this theoretically, is that this is, you know, as you were saying before, this is the formation of white supremacy, like, you know, precisely like on its face, you know, these acts of sedition, you know, insurrection. I would bring people to, you know, I try to raise awareness around these sorts of acts of violence, you know, when it comes to, you know, we could look all the way back to like, you know, the 1960s or even farther back than that. We can go and look back to the 1860s. And these are the same sort of actions that you would see, around, you know, the abolition of slavery, you know, the Civil War, right? And of Reconstruction. And within that, this is like this bolstering of, you know, these sorts of, you know, puritanical, acts of violence and, you know, just looking to, seize control away from, you know, any act of democracy.
I guess one of the sort of interesting kind of things about it is does I guess that in terms of like President Trump.
Yeah, the clock is ticking down.
He's now no longer president, essentially. But one of the things about kind of Trump is he does essentially represent a kind of movement for the kind of growing kind of far right to kind of gravitate towards. And I guess, do you think your kind of thoughts on, you know, in terms of this kind of assault on the kind of Capitol kind of building, does it represent the fact that Trumpism is, despite the fact it has been defeated electorally by the Democrats for better or worse, what do you kind of see this kind of reflecting in terms of the future of Trumpism, especially since there's clearly a section of the establishment who wants to smash it out of existence that's not motivated by any left-wing kind of ideology? Like, I'm talking in reference to the fact that Twitter has permanently banned Trump from, or I think he had, I wasn't sure about the 100% of that, has banned Trump from Twitter. There's the fact that a backlash that has been in response has been a crackdown on the far right on a lot of these kind of social media kind of networks. And I guess if with that kind of in mind, what is sort of like the future of the far right in this sort of particular context, especially in the context of a quite a weak left that is not necessarily building counter.
Again, that's a pretty interesting question. First off, that's pretty funny that you would mention the Twitter ban of Donald Trump, and that I find it most interesting that one of his last tweets quite literally like referred to that you know, the Make America Great Again, the America First movement that he's, you know, he's kind of he's spearheaded. He sees it lasting long into the future. So, as you were saying before, the U.S. left, has like a number of spinning plates, let's say, you know, going into 2021 and far beyond. And that, direct action, mutual aid, bail funds, et cetera. And this fight continuing against, you know, the racist, you know, state actors and the police, is going to continue far into, let's say the potential sunsetting of Trumpism, in this iteration, let's say, as far as, you know, the Republicans, you know, claiming like they're smashing it or whatever. I feel like it's just most likely just going to be a recontextualization of the, you know, of the dog whistling that, you know, made him so popular. His ostensibly, I was talking about this with someone yesterday. This, you know, if you look back into his past, this is like the actions of like a mob don, pretty much. You know what I mean? You use the means in which you possibly can. You roar up people, you know what I mean? And then you set them on an unsuspecting public. And I don't think that the Republicans, you know what I mean, or any of the congressmen, through this last election are really gonna distance themselves from that sort of rhetoric. The Democrats now, as you were saying with this, the sort of big tech movement, censor Donald Trump. This is my personal opinion, getting ready to speak here, but I kind of feel like, you know, his base, you know, have basically been kind of shooed to the corners of the surface web. But, I feel like this is just going to be something that drives them underground into like encrypted apps, like we just saw one of their larger bases, Parler, being taken off the surface web, and then there's like another far right Twitter alternative called Gab also being taken down over the last few days. But you know, like I said, there's encrypted apps like Signal and Telegram that they really like gathering in groups and organizing in. So if anything, you know, this sort of big tech censorship is a double-edged sword.
Yeah, because I think one of the things about the kind of big tech sort of censorship is there was already kind of like a track record of Twitter and Facebook silencing Palestinian activists. And one of the other interesting things to note is one of the more kind of liberal kind of responses to this sort of assault on the Capitol building, and I know Joe Biden has sort of alluded to this, is basically that we are, you know, in the context of the kind of far right kind of terrorism, we are under threat of domestic kind of terrorism. But of course, when Joe Biden kind of says things like that, you know, he's not just talking about this sort of loony sort of racist far right. He's also directing it kind of to the left. And it's sort of like there's clearly seems to be, I guess, in response to this assault on the Capitol building, there's clearly going to be a call to, in fact, actually increase the level of state control. And in fact, one of the sort of a random sort of comment I just like to sort of make is going back to sort of my comment, the comments and discussion about the police force and their kind of support for these sort of far right sort of ideologies. It's sort of like almost like a weird sort of funny contradiction that, you know, from some liberal commentators and from a lot of liberal sort of capitalist sort of politicians that, you know, the response to how we deal with this is actually we need more police, we need more secret police, etc., so we can prevent this from happening again, when actually it seems to be that the systematic nature of the police is actually one of the reasons why this was in fact allowed to happen, which is a bit of a sort of amusing kind of contradiction.
Yeah, most definitely. I agree. You know, as I was saying before, if you look back on some of the video footage that's available, you know, from January 6th, you know, the police are quite literally like raising barricades and assisting people up the steps. So again, like I said, like I was saying previously, you could see them quite literally marching arm in arm around certain aspects of, you know, like I said, this Trumpism and the way that they see a state apparatus and how they want to seize control. But back to your previous point, as you were saying before, this is most likely, like I was saying previously, this is going to be a double-edged sword as far as, like, you know, you try to swing it one way and being like, yes, you know, intelligence services, you know, the police, we should try to embolden them to, you know, try to wrangle in or make arrests or anything like this. And I feel like, you know, it's not going to be used with this sort of, with any sort of accuracy that like anybody, would honestly like expect that the police are not going to act like with a fair hand whatsoever. You know what I mean? And as you were saying before, this is going to come down as like a bit of a shadow over the left in the United States. You know, when it comes to this censorship and the police actions, as we were seeing previously in 2020 during the George Floyd protests, where there was like National Guard. You know, people were being like detained by like by the National Guard, their actors like within it. You know what I mean? And I feel like this is just going to be like the technological version of that. And again, I don't really think that the hand is going to be too strong when it comes to any sort of quote unquote justice when it comes to the state with these far right actors. I just don't see that it's a the state, you know, and the police and like the prison apparatus. Inversely, you know, the justice system has never acted in a way where it's like just when it comes to these sorts of means. A perfect example of this is that with over the last couple of days, this is like a breaking story that the far right again is like preparing another protest on the 17th, known as the Day of Rebellion, where Trump and his followers are planning on coming back to Washington, D.C. to interrupt the inauguration of Joe Biden. And they are quite literally calling for their followers to come to this one armed. So again, we're most likely going to see the failing of like, you know, the state apparatus and, you know, the police again to even try to bring this into a proper light so people can understand what this moment truly means as far as the far right and its terrorism is concerned.
Is there, I mean, responding to that quickly, I mean, you know, one of the funny things I just remembered is, with all this sort of chaos around the storming of the Capitol kind of building, I almost actually forgot that actually President Joe Biden's inauguration is actually going to be happening, a few kind of weeks, I think
it's usually the 20th.
The 23rd, it's usually
I think the date is being penciled again right now 20th. Because of what happened. But yeah, it's usually the 20th.
So is at this stage, whenever the inauguration is going to happen, is the far right or any sort of coin from
mobilizations like I said, it's the 17th.
Around that time?
The 17th, they're planning this, they're calling it refuse to be silenced. Like this is what I'm saying. Like this rhetoric, this dog whistling within it. And it's quite literally, I'm looking at a flyer for it now that people could probably look this up after they listen to the program. Like I said, it's refuse to be silenced. Armed march on Capitol Hill and all state capitals on January the 17th. So yeah, this is most likely like I said, a rallying cry for the far right to kind of, you know, bring themselves together off the surface rep and you know, plan for further actions beyond the 17th.
And I guess the next, I kind of want to move on to, I guess, more the final sort of discussion point I sort of want to sort of talk about for this, but this might seem to be going into a bit of a different kind of section, but I guess I want to sort of hear, I guess, your perspective and your kind of opinion on, I guess, now that Joe Biden is going to be essentially inaugurated quite soon, what do you think is going to be the character of the kind of Joe Biden kind of presidency, in relation to kind of these events, and do you think that these events will influence, Joe Biden's presidency in a particular direction? And I'm kind of interested in hearing a bit of speculation on how you think it will influence sort of Joe Biden's sort of
upcoming administration. Interesting question there, Ben. So yeah, as we were seeing, like I said, to kind of turn the clock back, you know, to earlier 2020, like the U.S. summer of 2020, Joe Biden has quite literally said, you know, that he has no plans, Vice President-elect, Kamala Harris, they have no plans on, you know, any sort of like a defunding of police or trying to, you know, reform the police or whatsoever. And as we said previously in our conversation, you know, there's talks now of like new domestic terrorism acts and these sorts of things. And a lot of what makes up his legislative base and his transition base all have really deep pockets when it comes to the police state. So from what I remember, he was proposing like a increase in the budget of policing to up to like $300 million. So we're going to see, you know, new forms of surveillance policing, new sorts of apparatus quite literally being handed onto the street against, you know, left activists in the United States in the coming weeks and months to come. This most likely, and then again, you know, we know the track record of Kamala Harris, which, you know, she is like quite affectionately known as like a top cop from her time as district attorney and state attorney and senator of the state of California. These two together most likely they're not going to paint a pretty picture as far as like, you know, what their plans are when it comes to like on the ground policing and like prisons. It's going to be a pretty interesting time. And then, like I said, like their lobbies are all made up of some of the worst advisors and state advisors you could possibly conjure up when it comes to these sorts of actions. It's going to be glad-handed. It's going to be welcome. It's going to be open arms for these sorts of actions. And yeah, it's just, it'll be a trying time, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. And I guess maybe to conclude, I guess, a bit of this kind of discussion, do you kind of have any sort of final comments you'd like to make? I mean, even like maybe a comment on the on what you think really, like you've sort of talked about really the future, what the Joe Biden administration, but maybe speaking more generally about, you know, where America is probably going to be going in the next several years, especially in the context of everything that is happening with the COVID-19 pandemic as well.
Yeah, that's for lack of a better word, it's a pretty what we're getting ready to discuss now is like a pretty like macabre. You know what I mean? I don't want to be too morose. You know what I mean? I don't want to leave anybody with like a downer note. You know, so I'd rather call for people to, you know, focus on what's most likely necessary, like in this time, you know, where it's like a, you know, bail action funds, you know what I mean? Assisting people with like, you know, the fight against evictions and the moratorium that was lifted, in December of 2020. And, you know, just mostly just like direct action to just like solidarity amongst people, because, the actions on January the 6th, as like salacious and like, as dangerous as they were, we have a future to fight for. So, with that being said, though, you know, like I said, I just hope that people could look at this time and see the middling and just the milquetoast response from the Democrats. And just kind of just have newer conversations about this moment, and that the two-party system in the United States and the Democrats most especially are not the ones. Actually, I take that back. They're ill prepared for the moment. So, but within that, we need to start coming up with new grounds for solidarity and kind of understanding the moment a bit more, and just preparing for abolitionist future.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Jonathan. I think it's it has actually been quite a very kind of good interview, that in terms of unpacking a lot of the kind of events that have kind of happened on the Capitol boom, because I think it has been something that has dominated kind of our listeners' sort of minds, and essentially it's pretty much all the kind of people on the left in Australia even want to really sort of talk about. So thank you very much, Jonathan. And just for our listeners, you are listening to Green Left Radio, and we might just go play a quick announcement.
Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate coming on to the program.